Hello. My name's Larissa, and I'm a compulsive eater. Hi. I am this year's speaker's chair, and Shirley, right here, is the co-chair. She will be the speaker chair for next year. Okay. I am so blessed and honored and grateful to introduce the speakers today. We have four wonderful people. And as I call your name, will you please come to the stage and take one of these seats over here, if you will. They're up on the stage. Okay. Shireen. From Colorado. Patricia from Arizona. Dr. J from Los Angeles, California. Mike O from the great state and area two, Texas, where I happen to be from. And I'm really just honored, and I hope and pray that everything that they say you would take real notes of, because it's all very important. Thank you. I got to have the first one to come up, haven't I? First, we're going to have Shireen. Where's Shireen? From Colorado. Thank you,
Shireen. I'm Shireen. I'm a compulsive eater. I will always be a compulsive eater. I was born a compulsive eater. My dog is a compulsive eater. And I don't know. It's kind of funny. I don't know if you heard this song. It's called "I Want to Talk About Me," and that's what I feel like I'm doing right now. Is I'm going to talk about me. So I'm going to give you my courage, strength, and hope, and I'm going to tell you my story because I know that story. I grew up in a bakery. My parents owned two bakeries in Colorado. Yeah, what a perfect union of flour and sugar, man. The other thing was both sides of my family were very heavy. And so I feel comfortable around heavy people. And my dad had diabetes and they struggled. And so I just kind of thought that's the way I was, that's the way God made me, and I was mad at the world for not accepting heavy people. So I'm one of six kids, grew up in a very religious family, and my dad wanted a football team, so he had four boys and then some girls, and so there were no leftovers at my house. There, if you wanted seconds, there were none. And when it was feeding time, you got in there and you got after it. So I learned that really young. We always thought the joke of our family, it was called the Wilson Curse, was the weight thing. And so what happened to me is I was large and in charge for 30 years. My top weight was 295. I lost 158 pounds in Sea House 6 years ago. Saved my life. Here are my hot jeans. I thought these were top of the... I was so proud of them. I thought they were cool, man. So here I go. So you can see where... So... Anyway, I'll put these up here so you can get the real view of them, and they're nice. And so what happened was I was just large and in charge and kind of pushing my way through life and mad. And when I was 47, I had double knee replacement. I have arthritis, but I was very heavy. And then I needed a hip replacement. And I couldn't walk. I had lost my mobility, and I didn't care. I didn't care about me. I just ran around and took care of everybody else because I thought that was my job. So when I had to have this surgery, they wouldn't do the surgery till I lost 100 pounds. And so for 7 months, I was stuck in my house looking out the window. I mean, I had a walker, but I couldn't work. And to be honest, even then, I didn't. What took me down was that I couldn't pay my son's rent in college, and I didn't want to call him and tell him that he had to come home. And that's what got me to CHOW. And I saw it in a newspaper, and I showed up at this parking lot at the church, and there was an angel there. And she saved my life. And so I got the surgery on my hip, and I had to lose 100 pounds, but then I kept going. And but for they'd set up the surgery, and I'd go in and I wouldn't make weight. So, and that happened 3 times. I'd be walking into surgery and I didn't make weight, because if in a hip replacement, if you're too heavy, it'll pull the ball out of the socket, and it's extremely bad. So anyway, I had the inability to accept reality, and my weight was like an armor against the world. But it was my escape too, because I was angry. It was a merry-go-round of the same thing over and over and over for 30 years, chasing my tail. Wondering when my misery would end. I did not want to give up my defect character of compulsive eating. I liked it. It is where I could be happy for just a little bit of time. And I'd feel okay, but I was slowly working myself. It was committing suicide, really, what slowly. So I was also on blood pressure and cholesterol for 19 years, pills. Some strength that I'd like to offer you is I'm grateful. You know what? When they told me I need to lose 100 pounds, the best thing that ever happened to me. That I needed new hips and new knees, best thing that ever happened to me. Because I had to change what was in my head. And you guys, knowing other compulsive eaters, is the only way I could do it. And I read in the book the other day where the closest you can get to your higher power is through other people. You guys are my peeps. You're the people that did it for me. One really hard thing is I was codependent, and I would take on other people's feelings. There were so many of us. There were 9 of us in the house, and my dad was kind of like Sergeant Carter on Gomer Pyle, lots of screaming and yelling. So I was afraid. So I learned to be invisible and hide. And what I've had to learn, something significant for me lately, is that what other people say and do reflects on them, not on me. It has nothing to do with me. Why did I take that? I'm like, oh God, we're gonna be sad today. We're all sad. And I've learned a lot about that. It's been wonderful. And the other thing is, like, the mishaps are such silver linings, such wonderful things. I can see myself as I really am now, and I'm just the bozo on the bus. I'm the knucklehead. I'm just a pebble on the beach. I got to get that ego out of there. I try to make accurate daily self-appraisals. My abstinence is serenity. That's how I stay serenity. So I was supposed to talk about a step. I picked step 1 because I'm powerless over food because my life is unmanageable. But what I really had to figure out, I'm powerless over everything, all the nouns, everything except my behavior. So that helps me accept life on life's terms. What I got to do is focus on my attitude, my part in interactions, and I love to argue, man, let's go, but I can't pick up that rope anymore. It's like the forbidden fruit. It's like sugar and flour. I kind of think of it that way. For me, I just can't have it. That's just what it is. And I try to think, what am I supposed to be learning today? Some days. And I try to stay in my lane. So what I hope for you, my hopes, telling you about my hopes is to pause when I'm agitated. Prayer and meditation is everything. It's everything. Keeps me at peace. So I replace my hopelessness with faith. I'm not in charge. Thank God I'm not in charge. I don't know what to do. I was always helping everybody. I didn't even know what's good for me. And here I was trying to run their lives. So anyway, to get to my tools, what I want for you, what I'm working on is my patience, acceptance, honesty. I told myself that it was okay to be obese. I deserved all that food because I did everything for everybody else. And humility. I get humbled every day. I'm wrong all the time. And my true faith in my higher power. And I try every day to do the next best thing that my higher power gives me direction. So I find joy in daily life. And I saw a word the other day. It said that we're all abstainers. You look at you abstainers. You're not compulsive eaters. You're abstainers. I used to hate that word. I love it now. I'm an abstainer. I'm going to abstain the rest of my life because I want to live. I don't want to die. And thank you so much.
And now we're getting ready for our next speaker, Patricia.
Good afternoon, family. I'm Patricia D. from Yuma, Arizona, and I am a very grateful compulsive eater. So, my experience, strength, and hope. This is so amazing. I am not nervous. I don't know why. But I'm very grateful to be here. There's a few people in this room that I have talked to many, many times over the last couple of years, and I wouldn't recognize you if you stood right next to me. So if you see me squinting at your eye tag, I want to make sure I say hello to you. My experience is that I never believed that I was a compulsive eater. I also grew up in a family that was a little bit different, but in my family, because My family came from not having much, and my mother came from living on a farm, that when it was my meal time, my mother would dish my dinner plate overflowing, and I was not allowed to leave the table until that was gone. And sometimes I'd fall asleep at the table because I could not finish it. But that was the way I grew up, and I would never do that to my children. you said a little, once you do that, as you're growing up, you get this mindset of there's just not enough. There's just not enough. So anyway, as I was growing up, I was a disciplined child. I was an overachiever. I always did more extra credit than anybody else because I didn't think I was good enough. And so I became the extra credit queen. And as I grew up, I was an overachiever. I got involved in a lot of activities, and just because I didn't want to go home, and that's a whole other story. But about in the 70s, I got introduced to my martial art, and I met a Chinese master. I studied Tai Chi and became an instructor for over, some of you know what that is, for over 35 years. And what that taught me is with my breathing, I could block out everything that was going on around me. I've even been in a car accident where our car tumbled down a mountain. And I was able to get out of that car, and through my breathing, I relaxed myself and just kept saying, breathe in, breathe out, breathe. And I blocked the pain out. So, and that's a true story. So that discipline, I use that with my other addictions and with my food. I didn't have a lot of weight to get rid of when I was introduced to see how. It's not about the weight. I found that out. It was about my thinking. I would, because I was disciplined, I'd gain a certain amount of weight and I'd find the next best diet. And then I would do it again. I would just yo-yo. And some of you have yo-yoed in your life. But it just was, what's the next best thing? I was always searching, looking for that extra credit so that I wouldn't have to deal with what was going on in my soul. It was all about my head. I can outsmart this. And I did that for many years, and that stopped working after a while. And I could go into, I don't want to go into a long story about, you know, what got me to where I was when I found CHOW, because I like to focus more on the solution and not on the problem. And on March the 8th of 2020, I called a dear friend that I've known for over 30 years, and I had a conversation with her just about how broken I felt at the time. And this is, I belonged to another program for 39 years. I knew what powerless was, and I knew what my higher power was, and I trusted my higher power, turned my will and my life over to him over here, but my food was over here, in that closet. That's where the secrets and the lies were, and that's where my self-worth was just going. I had none at the end. So I didn't go anybody to anyone in my other program who knew me very well, sponsors, sponsees, home groups and all that. I called my friend, and I don't know, I do believe that was my higher power intervening on me. I did not know she was a member of CHOW. Go figure. I was so aware that, that even though the last time I saw her was at a women's retreat, and I was gorging, and she brought out these little Tupperware containers. Tupperware with things, you know, she'd dump them on her little plate, and every meal she had these little Tupperware. I mean, I think she must own stock in Tupperware. But I never bothered. I was so self-obsessed. I never bothered to ask her, why are you doing that? You know, is your food better than ours? And months later, when I made that call, she told me that she had found a program, CHOW. And I mentioned this in an earlier panel, you know, I thought she meant, you can see how this works. That made perfect sense to me. But when she said, no, it's Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I don't know what, I'm getting God bumps right now, mentioning that again. That was a turning point for me. I shut up and I listened, and she explained the CHOW program to me. She talked about weighing and measuring all of her food, not just these and that, but everything, weighing and measuring everything. She said, you have to make 4 phone calls a day. A day? Oh my God. Go to 3 meetings a week. Well, I've done meetings. Phone calls and weighing and measuring, that was going to take a big effort. And by the time we finished that conversation, a switch inside of me was flicked on. My thinking changed. It wasn't about, oh my God, how much can I eat before I commit to this program? I've got cupboards and a refrigerator full, and okay, well, I could call her back at the end of the month. But I didn't do that. I got out my trash can, and I got rid of those foods that she said there wasn't much that left. But I got out the foods. She told me about the Forever Abstinent. I got that book, and oh my God, I was so confused. You know, the first 30 days you do this many and this many, and then after 30, and then you have to do steps 1 through 4 with your sponsor, and then when I finish, then I can go on to this and maintenance. Okay, I can add this, but not that, and just 1 tablespoon. I carried that thing around. I couldn't remember anything. To this day, I have a Forever Abstinent in my purse, because sometimes I go, do I get 2 tablespoons of fat and 1 mayo? I'm not supposed to talk about food, I'm sorry. But I need it as a reminder. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up. And because this program just spoke to me, I got on a phone bridge meeting the next day, and I cried. I was muted, *6, but... But I cried, and I was going to a different phone bridge meeting. I'd go to a speaker qualification, a traditions meeting, big book. There were so many different formats, and I could relate to every one of them. And I love that we read the books. I love that we read the big book, the 12 and 12. And through my literature and writing with my sponsor, I have gone through 11 different books where I have written every day the questions which take me back to Came to Believe, takes me back to the 12 and 12 as Bill sees it. I have so much information that, you know, I'm not an expert with this program, but I know a lot more than I did. And the gift with doing this program, I mean, jumping in with both feet, I didn't just test the waters here. I jumped in with both feet. And I have one abstinent date at this point, and I'm hanging on to it for dear life. I was amazed when I got a call about this, you know, being able to share. I mean, I've only been here not even 2.5 years. But I love CHOW. I love CHOW, and I love the higher power that I finally surrendered to. I mean, I've had a higher power, but God is, you know, I can't do this without God and without all of you. And I learned something at every function. I mean, this, I wish I could hear all of you share today, hear your stories, but there are no live meetings where I live. In Yuma, Arizona, bye. There are no live meetings, and so I rely on the phone bridge meetings and my outreach calls. And I am always looking for new numbers, so if anyone wants to, if I can get your numbers after this, if you want to pass me your number, I will call you. I will hunt you down. I am so grateful to be here. I owe so much to my sponsor. She taught me how to be a sponsor, and I wanted to mention to the newcomers, you know, when it talks about service in our tools, I know my sister is newer in the program. I mean, talk about a gift from God that we get to share. And she gets nervous about reading. And I remember how I was nervous the first time. I didn't want to mess up. It was just hard. If you go to a phone bridge meeting and if you're not there 15 minutes early, so you will not get to read. And those of you who do phone bridge know that you have to get there early so you can volunteer. And that's, you know, that's just what we get to do. We all want to be of service in one way or another. And because yet I have not been to a live meeting, I haven't had the opportunity to pick up chairs or help, you know, but I can't tell you enough how grateful I am. I don't do this program alone. I need each and every one of you. And if you're new or thinking about being new, I hope you reach out to somebody that, you know, that you can share that with, you know. We don't have to go out that door alone. So that's enough out of me. I am so grateful to be here. My name is Patricia D., Yuma, Arizona, and thank you to the committee, and see you around.
My name is Mike O., and I am a compulsive eater. I brought my notes with me. I did that because... You better quit teasing me. I was making notes for this speech, and my wife caught me, and she wanted to know what I was doing. I said, well, there's some things that I want to say that I don't want to forget. And she said, you better write your name at the top of that list. I put up with that every day. She also told me to write her phone number on the top of this. In case I get lost, y'all could call her and she would tell you where to put me. I've been in this program since 2002. I've been on maintenance since then. I've lost 150 pounds and I've had 2 recommitments. If we have any time, I'll tell you about those recommitments. One of them was under protest and the other one was the most powerful thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. I'm a sponsor, I sponsor other people, and I am sponsored. My sponsor is here, was here. Okay, my friends call me Melonhead and the Big O. My last name is Otto, and these were people that liked me. They said they liked me. I tried every commercial weight loss program that I knew about, and they all worked as long as I stayed with them, and I stayed with them until I didn't stay with them. I would constantly drag other people with me to these programs, and a lot of times I would quit before they got started real well. I made up some of my own, you know, don't eat. That was my main one, don't eat for 4 or 5 days. That was one of my diet programs. I got involved with that liquid diet. I did that twice. That's the most devastating, unhealthy thing that I ever did in my entire life. My wife told me that it looked like I was a prisoner of war going to the gas chamber. And I wasn't much better than that. Physically, I was not much. That was just absolutely horrible. I got two more little things that I did. Once, I have not talked to anybody since I've been in this program that experienced this, but there was a segment on 60 Minutes, and this had to be 30 years ago because it was before I came in, and they were talking about a weight loss program at the University of Duke. And I spent the next day or maybe the next complete 2 days trying to track that down. I couldn't get a hold of anybody at 60 Minutes. I couldn't get a hold of anybody at Duke. And from that day until this day, I've never talked to anybody that actually saw that segment on the TV. But they had the answer, and I was going to get it. That's how desperate I was. Right there at the end, I went on to hypnosis. And hypnosis was really doing pretty good. Until I ran out of money. I saw an ad in the paper. It was only $1,500, and that was way above our pay grade. I mean, and it was during the middle of the week. It was about an hour from the house. I had to sneak out and go there. My wife could tell that something was going on. I was afraid to tell her, mainly because I didn't want to own up to how much money I was spending. I wasn't going to have the hip surgery. I was going to have that stomach surgery. And the doctors told me the same thing that they told you. You need to lose 100 pounds before we're going to give you the surgery. And I thought, what kind of deal is this? It wasn't very good at all. I'm going to get on past this right quick, but I need to tell you about my health. It could not have got any worse. My neck, my back, my hips, my high blood pressure, high cholesterol. I was pre-diabetes, and my doctor said to me one time, Mike, if you think it's bad on that, you ought to see what it's doing to your heart and your lungs. That was the only fun I had was going to the doctor. One time, this was before they had everything on an iPad. They had charts. They had those charts they opened up. They wrote down their notes. This doctor, she left the room, and she left the notes out on the table. She didn't do that for me to read what was there. She did that because she was just leaving and just didn't figure I would be like a 2-year-old and go up there and look what was on the... Well, I did, and this is what it said. It said, grossly obese. Now, she had said a lot of stuff. I'd heard a lot of stuff, but when I saw it, in a doctor's clinical manual, it meant something to me. I was delusional. I knew I was way out of bounds on my weight. I knew I was unhealthy, but there would be times that I would look in a mirror and I'd say, well, you know, that's really not that bad. You know, if I stood like this or something, it was over. I mean, there's the time at night when I would go to bed and the lights would be out and I wouldn't be asleep. And I think all of y'all know what that few minutes is, and it was horrible. You couldn't hate yourself any more than I hated myself, emotionally and physically and spiritually. You couldn't get any more bankrupt than I was at that time. All right, now I'm going to start talking about what God did. God, this is when he started to get involved, and I'm going to tell you, he had his chances before now. Yeah. I'm a Catholic. Just about every workshop that I've been to, we've had people talk about their being Catholics and raised Catholics and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm that, and I still am today. The only reason I am is because I didn't listen to anything they said. If they said, if you do this, you're going to hell, I missed it. So that's the way that was. But anyway, my mother, my wife, my kids, all of my relatives, they were praying for me. They wanted something to happen to me that would make me a whole lot better off than I was. Like I said, I'd tried everything that you could possibly do, and absolutely none of it lasted very long. Now, this is what happened. I've got a brother that passed away now, was in this program for 10 years. A lot of the people in this room know him or remember him. Okay. he was in the hospital, and me and my mother and my wife went up to visit him, and we took my kids too. My wife wouldn't let my kids go and see him because he was horrible looking. Now, we weren't visiting our family. We were visiting the dying. It was terrible. Okay, so I'm sitting in that room with him, and I told him, I said, if you come out of this thing alive, we're going to figure out what to do with this weight problem. And then sure enough, he lived. So, yeah. So now I had to do something. Okay. There's about 10 miracles that work up to this, but you know, I'm leaving on a plane in a couple hours, and so I hadn't got time to talk about all of them. But that was the first one, you know, that he lived. The next one was when he got out of the hospital, I had no idea what we were doing. I had been everywhere, I'd done everything. I knew my own stuff wasn't working, but somehow in the back of my mind, I'd never been in an OA group, I'd never heard anything about them at all, but somehow, some way that came in my mind. So this was before you had the internet. I had to call information, and there's two huge towns north of where I live, or south of where I live. One of them's Dallas, and the other one's Fort Worth. I called OA in Dallas, and I called OA in Fort Worth, and I got the answering machines. The OA group in Dallas, they called back that day, and I'm still waiting for the people from Fort Worth to call back. Anyway, the lady that answered that phone listened to me for just a minute. I mean, she was kind of interviewing me, I think. And she told me she said it's in Dallas and it's on this street. And that's like saying, I don't know what in Los Angeles, you know, maybe Hollywood Boulevard. And that's all the information I needed. I didn't need an address. You know, I thought I could find this place. So anyway, I leave about 2 hours early. I start driving up and down the street. I knew it was at a church. I was looking for a church. I couldn't find a church. I pulled over and I said, Father, if you want me, or God, my higher power, if you want me to find this place and go to this meeting, you better show me this church. Okay, I made one more U-turn right through traffic, drive up about three blocks. I drove past this place a half a dozen times, and there it was. I mean, it couldn't have been anything else. Big, beautiful church and a bunch of outbuildings, and at the end of the outbuildings there was a parking lot that had about seven or eight cars in it, and that's all that was in that thing. To get to that meeting, I had to walk down the longest hall I've ever been in my entire life. They had just waxed it. I'm in tennis shoes, and every squink, 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 I did that the whole way. I get back to that door, and I could hear them talking, and I said to myself, so I opened that door, and my worst dream came true. There wasn't a fat person in the room. No. I said, they're having some kind of parish council meeting, and God led me to the wrong place. So I'm leaving and I'm walking out, and the lady that talked to me on the phone comes running down, and she's about this tall. She comes running down that hall and she says, Mike, come back here. You're in the right place. Okay, I walk in that deal. I'm going to fast forward this a little bit, but I'm going through a spiritual experience right now and I didn't know it. When I walked in that room, they were qualifying. And this is the only thing I heard that meeting. I didn't hear one thing about three calls and four meetings or food. I mean, it didn't make any difference. This is what I heard. I've lost 88 pounds, and I've kept it off for 3 years. I'd lost all my weight a lot, but I'd never, ever kept it off. While I'm sitting there listening to those people qualify, I told myself, I will never leave this place. Now, that wasn't me talking. That's my higher power talking. He gave me the willingness to be there. He had beat me down to a pulp for 20 years before I got to that. One day earlier, and I may not have stayed, but I made up my mind that day I was staying. If they told me to do something, I'm going to do it. If they said, light your hair on fire, give me the lighter. When I come back, they say, what do I do now? And they say, put your hair on fire again. I said, give me another lighter. I am staying. And if I can't do what they say I'm supposed to do, I'll lie to them. I'll tell them I am not quitting this deal. I've been waiting for this my whole life. Okay, briefly, This is about a 3.5-hour round trip. From the time I leave my house, go to the meeting, come back from the meeting. And I didn't want to tell my wife, or I didn't want to tell anybody, because I was afraid I would jinx it. Everything I'd ever been to, the first thing I did was announce that I'm in Weight Watchers and you ought to come too. I wasn't gonna do that this time. I swear to you that I was gonna keep this thing quiet and undercover, and I was kind of an undercover overeater for almost till I hit maintenance. All right, now this is another part of this miracle. I'm here about 5 or 6 weeks, still not able to talk. I have not had a blow up, but I mean, this was the most stressful time of my life, also the most interesting, but there were always all kinds of small things that went wrong that I broke my abstinence, so I didn't get to talk. And I also wasn't listening. You know, I didn't know we weren't in OA. It was only a month. I mean, how could I pick that up that quick? So the point I'm trying to make is the operator either gave us the wrong number, either we're listed right next to each other in the phone book. So now I'm in the right place, and I can't explain that. It was a long time. I mean, I've had lots of explanations about that since then. But at the time, there was nothing that I ever equated that to except absolutely positively gift from the higher power. I've got one other thing before I go on to the last five pages. I don't know whether anybody else in this program ever got this, but I got this deal called vegetable poisoning. Did anybody ever get that? Okay. I had a taste in my mouth that I could not explain. And I was positive that there is a rare poisoning from too many vegetables. And I had it. And the worst part about this was I wasn't going to tell anybody. I am going to die of vegetable poisoning at a normal size, then get off this program and be buried. You know, they were going to have to cremate me because they don't make a casket big enough is what I was. Well, anyway, after a period of time, I heard somebody else talk about that, and I said, oh, my gosh, I've suffered through this emotionally for a long time. My health was out of whack. All right, today these are some things that I do. I've heard some other people talk about this, and I'm going to tell you about my chores. And I consider them chores, and I consider them gifts that I get to do them. They're called reading and writing in the morning. I do the dishes, and I do clothes if they need to be done. I do exercise, and all of these things quiet my mind better than anything else I can do. I want to tell you that I'm a great meditator, and that my mind gets quiet after that or before. Mine doesn't work that way. My mind gets quiet when my hands are moving and I'm doing stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. But writing truly quiets my mind and clarifies my thoughts better than anything else. Now, my sponsor was the one that told me that. I said, listen, this meditation is for other people. He said, the quiet mind comes after meditation, not before. And I thought, yeah, now you're going to pull that on me. I've got some other stuff that this program does. It allows me to live. It taught me how to pray. It teaches me right living. I still have character defects, and some of them are paralyzing. And why he worked on other things in my life and did not, won't relieve me of all my character defects, I don't know, but he won't do it. I've got one other quick story about me and my wife, and I love her more than anything in the world, and she had to put up with so much stuff, it was unbelievable. But my brother had some kind of hernia, and they had an operation on him, and while he was doing that, that doctor removed some of the ripples that he had around his waist, and he came back and he looked better, and it was about 5 more pounds. And I thought, that's for me. So I asked my wife, I said, what do you think about me having some plastic surgery and removing some of these ripples? And she said, if you're going to have plastic surgery, you need to start above the neck. I've got one last thing I want to say, and it's about sponsorship. Whatever you do, get involved as fast as you possibly can with taking care of other people, because that is as good at writing as far as taking care of getting your mind clear. one of my first sponsors told me this. He said, if anybody ever asks you, don't ever turn them down. He said, the truth of the matter is most of them aren't going to stay. So any time that you think you've wasted, you have not. Always treat them with great respect, especially when they leave, because some of those that leave are going to come back. And you don't want to make it hard on them. You just can't do it. That's all I've got to say. Y'all are great. Thank y'all very, very much.
I'm Jay, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jay.
And I'm a compulsive eater, you know. I wish my addiction would concentrate only on food, but anything I like, it's over. It's over. If you can bear with me for a second, can we get a moment of silence? Thank you. That's for some compulsive eaters that used to come and take these seats here that are no longer with us. You know, some of them had succumbed to the disease of compulsive eating. What happens is I've been around here a long time, and I'd like to say I got multiple years of absence, but I don't. But I've been around here a long time, and this thing is like a double-edged sword. You get to love people around here, you get to know people around here, and some of them don't make it, you know. And there's some seats around here that I remember some people sitting in that you know, it's just coming back to me. They're not there. And that's what this program does. Listen, contrary to popular belief, I am not a plumber, okay? You guys just like to have fun with me, you know, and I like to have fun with you. Anybody enjoying this thing more? Like, I'm enjoying this thing. You know, it's amazing, you know. You know, this is the time when I would usually start telling you guys how perfect my family was when I grew up. And, you know, everybody was this and everybody was that. And I had a friend talk to me and said, Jay, you were shooting heroin at 14. Your upbringing was not all that perfect. And so, and this is recently, because I was like, oh, my dad. And so I had to take a look at that, and I might go back and look at that. I remember my first fourth step, and I looked at, you know, my growing up, and we couldn't really pinpoint a whole lot of negative stuff, but we did pinpoint that I didn't get any hugs as a kid. You know, hugging was totally, I don't know if it was outlawed, we didn't know about it or what. We just didn't do it. I had to come into the rooms, 12-step rooms, and learn how to hug. So now I've had some problems, you know, COVID. No, get away. You're a doctor. You should know better. If you're hugging, hug me. I need it. You know, if you're hugging, I need it. Okay, so growing up, a lot of you guys, I was not big. I was very, very thin. So a lot of you guys talk about when you had problems and you... you know, life was getting you down and people were, you know, on your case and calling you whatever. You would go to the refrigerator. I never went to the refrigerator. I went to the dope man, you know. Whenever I had that problem, I went and got this, and I got this little white powder. And that was my life, man. You know, it's funny because I get in the 12 steps and I was suicidal, man. I was like ready to give it up. And I saw all these people with bright eyes. And I saw all these people who were changing their lives. I saw all these people that were telling the truth. Because when I grew up, you didn't tell nobody nothing. You didn't get on no podium and tell them nothing about your life. You know, everything is... And I was so excited. And I saw you guys' eyes. And I said, man, I told my sponsor, man, I'm going to stop using. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop smoking. I'm going to stop cheating on my wife. I'm gonna start going to church, I'm gonna stop lying. You know, I was just like, I was so overwhelmed. And he said, Jay, you only been here 2 days, just relax, you know? I don't know about you guys, but everything I wanted yesterday. You know what I mean? You know, that's still around, man. There's a lot of isms and stuff still around. I've been around a long time. And there's still a lot of stuff. And I just really appreciate the fact that you guys were able to, you know, make food something I can deal with and doesn't deal with me. You know, is it something? I have a really good respect for food, and you guys did that for me. So I come around, I stop, I do some things, and I do some other things, and then all of a sudden I'm starting to get big because I'm taking away all of these other things that I did. And I remember smoking was one of them. I had a friend that had stopped smoking a year before me, and we go to dinner. And I said, I'm going to stop smoking. And I had that first day, 24 hours. So we're at dinner, and I'm like, ooh, I have a cigarette. You know, I can't. And she says, hey, forget about the cigarette. She said, you see that dessert over there? Why don't you have another one of those, you know? And knock on wood, I haven't had a cigarette since then. I have not had a cigarette. But I had a hell of a lot of desserts after that, man. So people were saying, Jay, you look like you're getting a little big, man, you know. And I ain't never been big. What are you talking about? You know, anybody know the derivative denial? Okay, big time. I'm not big, you know. I just stopped smoking. And then somebody would say, well, when did you stop smoking? I said, oh, about 8 years ago, you know. So my Eskimo, I'm not going to point her out. She's selling raffle tickets. Came and I saw her, and I hadn't seen her in about 60 days. Or so, I don't know. And she was half her size. And I said, what the hell are you doing? You know, how can I get in there? And so I went to my first, it was an OA howl, and my first howl meeting. And I go to the door, and it was the hardest thing for me to do, man. It was the hardest thing for me to do. And it shouldn't have been, because the room I went to, I knew that room. I'd been in that room. The steps and the traditions that they had up there with a little change, I knew those, you know. I had a God in my life. So why was it so hard for me to get into that first meeting? Because I knew you guys were not Jenny Craig. I knew you guys weren't Weight Watchers. I knew you guys were very serious about this thing called compulsive overeating. And I knew that what you guys were going to do was mess up my eating for the rest of my life. Story would be great if I never had another compulsive bite after that. But it's not that. But you guys did mess up my eating for the rest of my life. There was a meeting. It's Zoom now. It's called Motown Monday. If you get a chance, go see it. And it used to be at a church. You know, the church was down the street from my house. So this is the way I used to eat, too. I don't know about you guys, but I would get the dessert from here, and I had to go get this from here and this from there. And I had to get everything just right. So I get it all in my car. And I'm like going home. And you know, you guys remember that commercial? The Carl's Jr. commercial said, don't bother me, I'm eating. I'd lock the door, and I might get I might have a clicker and watch some TV or go through the channel, but I didn't need nobody with me. I'm like, don't bother me, I'm eating. That's the way I use food. So I'm in the program a little while, I go out. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I would get too smart for you guys, you know. I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna do it the how way, I'm gonna do it Jay's way, you know what I mean? And so I get all of this stuff, and I go for various places, and I'm driving down. And I passed the church where the meeting was on Monday nights, and I knew it. And I see the light on the church, and I noticed there was a guy who used to say, man, you don't have to live like this. He said, man, you don't have to live like this. You don't have to sweat when you got this food in anticipation of going and just Xing everything out. And my whole family, I had a big family. Fuck them. I'm going to my room. I'm going to eat. And I could hear his voice say, you don't have to live this way. And it'd be nice if I didn't go, but I'd go and eat it anyway, you know what I'm saying? So bottom line, okay, so this is a great program, man. So much that I, you know, want to grasp. Don't let me go over. But they asked me about a tradition. No, they asked me about a step. Now, my favorite step used to be step one. you know, powerless and everything. And I'm aspiring to win. My favorite step is step 12. Practicing these principles in all our affairs. Ooh, that's deep. And I'm not there yet. But my step that I love now is step 6. And I used to hate step 6. If you remember, that's the one they talk about entirely ready to have God remove all your defects of character. Entirely ready. That was a little too deep for me. Oh, fine. Oh, God, I got to go. Okay, so here's the deal. I used to like say, oh, man, these people, 12-step people, y'all want me to be perfect. You know, I don't want to be perfect. You know, damn, you know. What are y'all talking about? If I woke up tomorrow and all my character defects were gone, I wouldn't even recognize myself. What the hell is this? I'd be like the hole in the donut. Who the hell wants to do that? I got some defects I need to hold on to. By the way, you guys gave me a guide. I didn't have one before I got in it. So, you know, that was my thing. You know, I don't want to be perfect. So I'm going to a meeting, a book study. And it's on the 6th step. And there was this defect that I just could not get rid of. It was one you read in the big book, they talk about the one that you say, I will never give that up. I'll take that one. I had that one, and I was holding it. I was like, God, I ain't getting this one. And so I go to a meeting, and it's a 6-step meeting. And so then there's a guy who needs a ride after the meeting. So I give him a ride, a newcomer. I give him a ride. And so I'm expounding my theory on the 6-step, you know, hey, I don't want to, you know, be a hole in it on it. And he looked at me and he said, Jay, if God is powerful enough to remove your defects of character, don't you think he has enough power to give you something better? I was like, what? That's a newcomer! What the hell is he saying? That was about 4 or 5 years ago. And I was able to give up that defect. And I was able to get something better in my life. You know? And it's amazing. So, like I say, if you haven't hugged me and you're hugging, hug me, because I need it. And the moral of that story is always give a newcomer a ride home. Thanks, guys.